Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan. This is a discussion. Don, would you like to start this with your plan review?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and I'd appreciate being able to go through all of this and maybe take questions at the end. And let me start by saying thanks to the staff for their excellent analytical work, particularly from Kyle Addix and Ron Warren, clarifying the agreement put forward on December 1st, 2017. And thanks to attorneys Mike Grossman and Bill Freimeyer for their work on the legal aspects of this challenge that we're taking on. We also appreciate the fact that there was a heavy December 1st deadline that had to be adhered to, and the negotiators were rushed without the benefit of discussion of mitigating efforts or other feedback from the commission that we'll get to here after a bit. And Mr. Vice Chairman, thanks particularly to you for your leadership and with the sport fishing community about a difficult situation. Amidst the various issues at hand, it's important to stress that we feel it's important to take the necessary conservation action in concert with our tribal and federal co-managers to protect and rebuild Chinook stocks that are depressed. Conservation is at the heart of our agency mission, and it's the very difficult policy chore of finding the proper balance of allowing a level of sustainable fishing that we're trying to wrestle with here. Further, there are good reasons for achieving a lengthy period of ESA coverage for Puget Sound fisheries, and this is a worthy goal that we should pursue. However, I'd like to address three areas of concern and ask my fellow commissioners to react with regard to policy guidance to the staff. First, I think we need to recognize the public outcry on this. Second, I think the total package of conservation measures is inadequate for still at Guamish Chinook. And third, we need to reconsider some fishery restrictions. A couple of initial observations on these three areas. On the matter of needing to recognize the public outcry on this, last Friday we had 16 people travel quite a distance to Ridgefield. 100% of them were against at least some terms of this December agreement, and this is the predominant feeling from the sport fishing community who we've heard so much from. We've received a multitude of thoughtful, heartfelt letters describing how important sport fishing in the Sound is to them, questioning many of the elements in the December 1 agreement. With regard to economics, we've heard and read a lot of significant testimony about the severe economic impact of the December 1st agreement, and people would like to know how the socioeconomic impacts were considered in the policy decisions of balancing conservation needs with a lesser amount of fishery cuts. There's a lot of fears and claims about a very, very dismal future for sport fishing in Puget Sound, and we're not sure all are true. We know, based on the briefings last Friday and the Friday before, that some are not true. For example, when we hear about a total closure of all of Puget Sound for 10 years. Lastly, with regard to the public perception on all this, there's been complaints about lack of communication, and I think we need to acknowledge and recognize that there are legitimate and genuine shortcomings in this area. People were caught cold on December 1st about a 10-year agreement with hugely significant implications. Regarding the total package of conservation measures being inadequate, I think much more needs to be done outside the world of fishery restrictions. There are significant habitat problems in many watersheds, particularly in the South Fork of the Stellaguamish. The habitat problems in the Stellaguamish are so severe that the written plan notes that fishery restrictions alone will not do the job of providing for recovery. The seal and sea lion predation problems are severe in Puget Sound and are not being addressed. That's another thing I think that we need to think about in terms of conservation. And while additional fishery restrictions may ultimately be proper, more needs to be done in the areas of hatchery health, habitat restoration, and negative ecological interactions. Thirdly, on the observation about fishery restrictions, I think some fishery restrictions need adjusting. The Stiligwamish module of this agreement appears to be the controlling link, and it appears modifications are warranted. Some fishery restriction features for the Stiligwamish are unique. They appear on the surface to be inconsistent with some other restrictions in the plan and appear to be more severe than necessary. So with those initial observations, and after we've learned more about all of this from the briefings and considered the public comment, let me provide some policy perspective on these three areas in reverse order, with some recommendations for the commission to consider as guidance to the staff. While I believe we should continue to delegate to the staff the job of negotiating this agreement, I recommend we provide the staff with the following guidance in these three areas. On that first area, on that third area, or in reverse order, regarding the fishery restrictions, upon reflection, it appears we should take a fresh look at the Stiligwamish module provisions. Considering the information we've been provided, I think it'd be prudent to first of all direct staff to advise the parties to the agreement that the state would like to reconsider some of the fishery impact limits. As a similar procedural request that the National Fisheries Service has made on their reflective opinion to reconsider fishery impact rates on other matters they believe and other matters they believe are insufficient in the December 1 document. In particular, I recommend that we provide staff guidance to bring five things to the negotiations. First, a new option for unmarked Stiligwamish Chinook that deals with the gap between the 15% impact rate allowable preseason in the old plan and the 8 to 13 preseason impact limits in the December 1 version in a way that's more favorable and stabilizing to southern U.S. fisheries. Second, for marked hatchery fish in the Stiligwamish River, removing the curtailment of marked selective fisheries to further protect marked hatchery Stiligwamish Chinook. I hope that the staff could pursue this by working with the Stiligwamish tribe to consider phasing out their use of the adipose fin clip in a reasonable time frame or considering other options. Third is the idea of an off-ramp in the upward direction. If the stocks improve more than the RER modeling projects, as we've seen in the recent past where Columbia River, Upriver Bright Stock Fall Chinook, or if the Pacific Salmon Treaty impacts drop below the average expectation in the current planning efforts. Such an off-ramp contingency allowing for higher southern U.S. fishery impacts should be part of a 10-year plan because the unexpected can occur in a positive direction, as we talked about a couple of Fridays ago. Fourth, the idea that agreed-to limits be achieved on average with reasonable precision by our sophisticated and conservative management style, as opposed to being ceiling not to be exceeded. We do have a conservative management style, and it has worked quite nicely achieving its goals. That has been not to exceed ceilings when ceilings are in place. I avoid the use of the word targets in describing this concept because limits would not be targets if they're not commingled healthy stocks in the fishery. And fifth, as a last piece of guidance on finding the proper balance between fishery restrictions and conservation responsibilities, staff should look for other opportunities for better fishing rates than shown in the December 1st draft, recognizing there is a need to reduce from status quo fishing impacts on those stocks that are declining and to deal with the evolving National Marine Fisheries Service perspective on potential ESA limits. Now, there are many ways to adjust the plan language to achieve this guidance, and recognizing we don't want the commission to be involved, but we're continuing the delegation, we have to note that the complexities of all this are great. So we should not get very prescriptive or exact with this guidance, in my opinion. We need to leave room so the staff can work for agreement from the parties and do the best they can toward achieving the intent of this guidance. Additionally, the staff should coordinate these RMP efforts very closely and frequently with those dealing with the current Pacific Salmon Commission Chinook Annex renegotiations, which are still not finished. And in a matter that does two things. First of all, to demonstrate that the changes from status quo from inside fisheries that we're talking about as bringing something to this, to the negotiating table, so to speak, in terms of conservation. And second, that anything we're doing here meshes with any reductions in intercepting fisheries to the north. And that is an original principle of the Pacific Salmon Treaty, to reduce intercepting fisheries where possible. And so as the Pacific Salmon Commission process concludes, if it concludes with some reductions, that there is a look at opportunities for flexibility in the south over the course of the 10-year period of this RMP. One last matter on fishery restrictions involves the 2018 North of Falcon process. Recognizing that the National Marine Fisheries Service, and with this guidance, the state, is asking for continued discussion of the December 1 package, fully negotiated resolutions for future years are unlikely to be agreed to by the onset of the 2018 North of Falcon process. Thus, the 2008 North of Falcon process should be conducted in a similar manner to the 2017 process, and that the guiding features, such as management objectives and controlling models, be the same as 2017, unless there is full agreement amongst the parties about using different features at the onset of the 2018 process. I mentioned that's probably unlikely, but it is possible. The important point here is that stability in 2018 is important while new features are being negotiated for a future 10-year period. On a different topic, on the matter of the total of all conservation measures not being adequate, the following deals with additional non-fishing related conservation measures beyond the fishing related conservation measures that would take place over the course of a 10-year period. In the January 12, 2018 presentation by the staff, slide 46 spoke to additional mitigation being applied to this challenge beyond fishing. It could be considered when you're discussing possible fishing rates. I think there are at least four mitigation factors we should add to the overall equation when considering the 10-year limits on fishing. The first one has to do with the perspective of a possible conservation hatchery. This is an idea, this is a concept, and this is a proposal. Let me briefly tell the story of how successful a properly designed conservation hatchery can be that's cognizant of good genetic integrity principles, and that's the story of the Snake River Falls Chinook. For those that are on here, and commissioners, you saw a little bit of this the other day in Ridgefield, but on the website there are two things that are posted that I'd like to refer to as a visual aid in this. In your agenda, under Agenda B, you'll see two tan-colored graphics. The second one, the Snake River Falls Chinook Dams and Counts. If people could click on that one, then I'd like to speak just a little bit to that. And again, this is the story of the Snake River Falls Chinook. And about how a conservation hatchery can be a good thing. It's a story of a Falls Chinook population that went into an egg bank hatchery program that still had access to salt water and was released for salt water. And I'll just give an abbreviated version of this story. And please excuse all these oversimplifications and lack of contextual detail. But if you look at that, you'll see, first of all, a map of where this occurred, and it's in the Lower Snake River. The last of the four Lower Snake River hydroelectric dams were completed in the early 1970s. Three of them were done then. John Day Dam below McNary Dam was completed in 1972, as I recall. And if you look at the graph just below this map of where this is taking place, you'll see that the fall Chinook that were in the area declined significantly due to the habitat problems associated with the inundation of the river behind the dams, the downstream mortality of juveniles passing the dams, and with these three additional new ones in the 1970s in the Snake, it was a total of 8 dams between these fish and the ocean. There were upstream migration problems for adults as well. There were changes in water temperature, and there were other habitat problems. So in this situation, the problem here was a habitat disturbance, but it was not siltation like on the Stillaguamish River, but rather hydro dam-related habitat problems. And as we went through the end of the 1970s and into the 1980s, extinction of this valuable genetic strain was a common discussion point around the basin. In the late 1970s, some of the fish were captured. The last of the few fish that were up there were captured in a high percentage and brought downriver to Kalama Falls Hatchery, below all the Columbia River main stem dams, below Bonneville Dam. For about 2 generations, or about 10 years, eggs were hatched, juveniles were uniquely marked and tagged and released. The returning adults were kept separate from the local Thule strain of Falls Chinook, and they were released to the ocean and returned without suffering from the hydroelectric dam mortality that was of such a concern. There were other hatcheries involved in this effort as well besides Kalama Falls, Hagerman Hatchery in Idaho for one, and they were all part of this egg bank program to preserve this strain that were released to the ocean every year. After a bit, Lions Ferry Hatchery came on board, and the Nez Perce tribe made considerable efforts for a tribal hatchery in the area, and the fish were taken back upriver, away from Kalama Falls Hatchery and elsewhere, back to the Snake River homeland. Habitat fixes began to take hold, and there were improvements at the dams with spill over the top. There was some effort at fish-friendly turbines, and there's a variety of other improvements, and the abundance of Snake River began to improve. If I could draw your attention to the other graphic in the on the website, it says CRITFC, that's Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, Snake River Falls Chinook Recovery. If folks could click on that, they would see a web page that's on the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission's web page that provides a lot of information about this pretty spectacular comeback of this strain of fish in the Snake River. And if you scroll down a ways, you'll see a set of numbers that show things bottomed out in 1990 when there were only 78 wild Snake River Falls Chinook above Lower Granite Dam spawning. And it remained at some very low levels in the late 80s and early 90s. When these conservation hatchery programs and all of their acclimation ponds and all of the other features took hold, the fish started to come back. And you'll see that graphic that now, in 2015, there were 16,000 wild Snake River spawners above Lower Granite Dam, together with 42,000 hatchery fish for a total of just under 60,000 fish. So coming back from 78 wild fish to almost 60,000 fish is pretty spectacular. I think the counts since 2015 have also been very good, above 30,000, somewhere in that zone. And it's quite a startling recovery success. If you scroll down on that website just a little bit, you'll see a photograph of a bar that is just loaded with Chinook salmon reds on the stretch of the Clearwater River. So you'll see lots of fish spawning out in the wild. And you'll see a couple of graphs to the right that show the breakdown of wild and hatchery fish with the current level of spawning for a number of years, looks like a decade or more, of just the wild fish being over the nymph's threshold. So anyway, the long and the short of this is it was a successful example of a conservation hatchery helping out while habitat fixes were being dealt with. So that is relevant to this concept of, can something be done on the Stillaguamish River that might be able to achieve such kind of help to the population there that's got some severe habitat problems. We understand that the Stillaguamish tribe already has some conservation hatchery facilities in play, but there are some limitations there. And while we'd like to applaud these forward-thinking measures of the tribe, I think it would be useful to join them and try to do a little bit more. So therefore, I'm recommending that the commission task the department staff with pursuing this idea, with pursuing this concept with the Stillaguamish tribe, and if this concept is something they're amenable to, forwarding a request to the governor's office to pursue $5 million in new resources for a state-of-the-art conservation hatchery with a completely bulletproof, secure water system. This request should be formalized in a letter to the governor as soon as the discussions with the Stillaguamish tribe have been made, if they believe this is a positive measure to try to do things better. Further, we tasked the staff with considering any sort of a bridge program using existing state facilities and capabilities that could achieve this kind of conservation hatchery intent in the immediate time frame, because building a state-of-the-art hatchery would take a little bit of time, obviously. And so I propose that we ask the staff to discuss this kind of an idea with the Stillaguamish tribe also, and report back to the commission in a timely manner if there's any kind of bridge program that might work. So that's the first very important mitigation effort outside the world of fishery restrictions. The second mitigation effort is to negotiate with the Stillaguamish tribe about tactical control of seals and sea lion predation when the smolts for these Chinook populations migrate to saltwater on the estuary interface and on their return as adults. There's been recent work in the scientific literature. I think some of you have been provided this article that came out just this past summer that speaks to the very large take by seals and sea lion populations over the past decade or so, in an amount that's been equal to the fishery cuts, and in an amount that's now in the vicinity of 30 million salmon kind juveniles. And the seal population appears to be focusing on the juvenile salmon on their out-migration coming out of the rivers into the estuaries and into the early saltwater. So in some ways, it's no wonder that we haven't seen the rebound that we've hoped for from all of the fishery cuts recently. And this seal and sea lion predation matter has been the subject of a lot of talk recently, but now the science is starting to document just how severe this problem is, and it does need to be addressed. Another very important mitigation factor is habitat restoration in the Stillaguamish Basin. I believe we should task the staff with bringing this challenge to the appropriate state, tribal, federal negotiating table with a call for a new and renewed multi-agency investment in genuine habitat restoration, and that the staff recommend the appropriate planners be convened by June 15, 2018, and attempt to move this forward and demonstrate that this is just not talk. Strong habitat restoration needs to occur while two complete generations get conservation hatchery help over a 10-year period if folks agree to move in that direction. The last mitigating factor is to call for increased multi-agency investment in research, data improvements, modeling enhancements, and other such matters that have been involved in the litigation Sentinel Stocks Program package in the Pacific Salmon Treaty arena that Phil Anderson spoke to us about last Thursday afternoon. And the last matter here, Mr. Vice Chairman, has to do with providing better communication to the public, particularly the fishing public. So I recommend that we direct staff to prepare a news release today that describes this commission policy guidance to staff, if the commission agrees with it, and discusses its significance to the public. I think it should provide the true facts and impacts of this process including what the positive benefits might be in the long run and in the short run, and dispels some of the rumors and exaggerations that we have now found out are just not true. I'm concerned that there are folks out there that do believe that this agreement called for a complete closure of all of Puget Sound sport salmon fishing for all of the next 10 years, and that is just not true. The news release should inform the public about the timeline of the process, this lengthy process in coming up with a 10-year federal ESA coverage permit. This is going to conclude, the proposal part of this will conclude in 2020, and there will be additional opportunity for refinement. I'm not sure everybody understands that complexity. I think a news release should note that as a policy matter, we are searching for stability and improvement in the fish stocks, as well as stability and improvement in Puget Sound fisheries. And that we send this positive, hoping message out to the public. I think that it's important that we try to improve the communication as this goes through the next many months, and do it in a timely manner through our Puget Sound advisory process, which is completely open to the public. What is presented to the public will be done within the confidentiality constraints of the current mediation process. So I don't think the public ought to expect quick turnaround briefings periodically, but rather when this gets to a point where there's a significant amount of information to provide, and before it gets to a state of finality, that we would expose the thinking through our advisory body, and again, that's open to the full public. Also, as a matter of communication, I think we should plan for routine briefings of the RMP negotiation process to the commission in executive closed session under the auspices of the ongoing litigation under U.S. v. Washington case. And again, I want to stress that the commission, I'm recommending that the commission not be involved in these negotiations, that we stay with the delegated authority. However, that we are advised as we go through the process within the constraints of confidentiality. So in closing, let me just say that I believe the more people interested in salmon, the better off the salmon will be. We'd like to keep people interested in salmon throughout this process and for the next 10 years, including in particular those who have fished for salmon in the past or want to fish for salmon in the future. If we keep searching for ways to make things better, this can happen. And I've got some cryptic talking points that I'm referring to here that I can provide to the staff for their reference. But Mr. Vice Chairman, that concludes my comments here. I'd be glad to take any questions if there are any.
Well, Commissioner McIsaac, thank you very much for that effort. From my perspective, it's a very forward-thinking strategy and very comprehensive across all sectors, and a lot of work, and appreciate it. Other commissioners, comments, questions?
This is Commissioner Graybill. I want to thank Commissioner McIsaac for a very thorough treatment of the challenges that we face with this document. And there are some questions I would have. And I'll just detail them, and Don or other commissioners can respond to it. On the matter of the hatchery on the Stillaguamish, I'm not sure where the cost figure of $5 million came from. The recent construction and completion of a hatchery at Bridgeport, for example, cost $16 million. And I just, I'm not comfortable with just a number out there to describe to be adequate for what's envisioned. I believe that we can, and that would take a period of years to complete, not that that wouldn't be a good thing, but I believe we can introduce some bridging efforts that Don referred to that we can immediately put in place. We can find space in existing hatcheries and immediately begin the process of rebuilding these runs. And I would like to see that explored. I totally agree that we have a real problem with the seals in Puget Sound that are devastating to our salmon populations. And I just am concerned about how we can deal with that. We go back to the days of Herschel and the Ballard locks and the frustrations of trying to get that under control. And I'm just concerned that any efforts to remove or reduce those populations would present litigation from a wide range of protection organizations. But I would like to see what our opportunities are in that area. I also want, you know, the focus of this, so much of this has been on the Stillaguamish, but I want to be sure that we don't have other constricting stocks that could have negative impact on the potential sport fisheries and commercial fisheries on Puget Sound. And I believe that we could point to the Nooksack as another point, potential restricting stock. And so I just don't want to move ahead with the total focus on the Stillaguamish when there are potential other areas of concern. I just wanted to bring that up too. And I do believe that we do have, through these briefings and discussions amongst the commission, that there are some opportunities to bring relief to the extremely restricting elements of the Stillaguamish River fishery at this point. So those are my comments, and I'd like to hear from other commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. Anyone else?
Commissioner Thorburn.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. Thank you, Don, Commissioner McIsaac, for this very thorough treatment, as has been said. I have some of my questions may relate to how this will apply to the process, and so I'm not sure that I'm glad our attorneys are here. I'm not sure what can be dealt with in open public comment, but I'm going to turn first to the conservation measures. We've had some discussion about the need for conservation measures being alluded to in the RMP that was released on December 1st, but nothing specific. And it was explained to us the importance of them being realistic if they're in the plan. That will be the expectation, that they're realistic. I turn to the hatchery and the letter asking the governor for $5 million. I that's an unusual process, it seems to me. We have a budget process in the state, and it goes along with the legislature, and the governor's budget actually has already been submitted. So this be an addendum, or would it come back to the department with a message, you know, find this funding in your revenue? I'm curious about how that would work. But in addition, I'm curious about how the conservation measure directives would work into the future negotiations, given the need for specificity. And, you know, I think Dave also pointed out that, Commissioner Graybill pointed out that there are questions about how these could exactly be completed, funding one, problems with lethal predator control that always come up whenever that's undertaken. And then a concern that I expressed previously in terms of the renegotiated options, and that is the off-ramp suggestion. I am concerned that we're dealing with long-term listed stocks that have seen a downward trend since the listing, and we can argue about how steep that downward trend has been. And in terms of recovery, it's slow process, as we all know. And I think it's a process that is represented by trend, not by a good year necessarily, especially given all of the external environmental factors that impact recovery in these that are entirely out of our control and getting more and more out of our control impact these stocks. I would not be comfortable with an off-ramp without being assured that the trend is solidly upward and that we're seeing true recovery. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Any others? I have a question
Commissioner Smith.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chair Smith.
Yeah, I really appreciate the thoughtful presentation and the thoughtful questions. And what I would like to see is, I know with our staff sitting around the table there, a timely response back to us on the presentation and the thoughtful questions, because I have the same questions, and I would like to see how our extremely talented staff, what their thoughts are about this, and getting back to us as soon as they could.
I have a question. This is Mr. Carpenter of Councilor Freymeyer. This thoughtful presentation that Commissioner McIsaac brought forward, and there's been some discussion. Is this an item that, Bill, that we're seeking guidance to the staff, or is this an item that would be most appropriate if we put a motion up and voted on it?
Vice Chair Carpenter, this is Bill Freymeyer. I think you can do it either way. The commission in the past, one member has, provided some guidance similar to this, and other commissioners have weighed in and signaled their support, just informally, and that's been enough for the department to get a sense of the direction. In other times, if the department has a question as to sort of the guidance of the commission, you've gone forward with a motion to be more formal. So I don't think there's a detailed requirement either way. The staff may be able to give you some sense of toward the end of the call of what their desire is or what their need is.
Fair enough. Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
That's where I was going with my question.
Yes. Who is this, please?
Brad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Next.
And Mr. Vice Chairman, after Commissioner Smith's done, a comment from me.
And then one from Commissioner Baker.
Okay, Brad, have you finished, or do you want to continue?
Yeah, right. I was just, what I was saying is what Bill just said, to see where the staff were thinking at this point before we take an action.
Fair enough. Okay, Commissioner Baker, then McIsaac.
Thank you. I don't have a strong opinion whether we take an action right now or if we wait a few days and hear the staff's response. I might want to hear some of the staff's response to this right now. We're on the phone. They've obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I believe worked with Commissioner McIsaac over the weekend to fine-tune his talking point. So there's no reason why we couldn't get at least an off-the-cuff reaction now. But what I want to say is that two things, essentially. The main criticism, aside from who's making it, whether it's the sports fishers or anybody else, any of us, of this plan is that it simply won't work, that the curtailing the fishing isn't enough. So what I like about Commissioner McIsaac's proposal, and I like it very much, is that if we are able to take on a bigger challenge, which is to actually try to bring back these stocks, we have to add some mitigation measures. I don't know if these are the right ones. I do think that the funding of a big hatchery could be an issue, but I also think that to explore shared financing, either with the federal government, the state, possibly the tribes, I know that those kind of things have worked in the past, so I like the idea of looking into that. When I spent most of the last year trying to come to some degree of understanding of the fisheries issues, what I've heard mostly from our co-managers is that habitat, we have to start taking habitat seriously. Until we do that, we may stem some of these extinctions that we're talking about, but we're not gonna get recovery of these stocks. So habitat restoration, which is at the heart of conservation, is my priority, and so I'm ready to vote today or tomorrow, but I think time is of the essence. So if we punt this and ask the staff for a formal response, something written down, something I don't know if we can do in the context of the mediation, it would need to be punted with a short timeline. And so my main point here, I'll conclude with this, is that my vote and my effort would be to get more for these fish and not just be satisfied with a fishing restriction that isn't even in the plan. The one thing that is clear is that even in the plan, it's predicated on it probably won't work.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. So what I'd like to do now is
Mr. Vice Chairman?
One second, Don. I was going to pass the ball to you and let the staff know that after you're done, we'll ask some staff feedback on this, if we may. Go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I was kind of going in that direction, too, but just as a matter of how to proceed, I imagine we could make a motion and on seconding discuss these various things. I think it's maybe easy, maybe that would get complicated. That would take a lot of time today to even get to that stage. I wonder if I could respond to some of the comments I've heard, and maybe all of them except for one could conceivably be handled without a motion. But the matter of having the staff respond to this, I would like to hear their response to some of these things today, as opposed to waiting for a response. I think that there is a timely element here that needs to be considered. You know, we heard a lot of testimony about all the negative things, and with all of the various activities that are going on in the month of January, while all this negative talk continues and gets more and more negative, I think the sooner we get some correction to some of that to the public, the better. If the commission is inclined to try to provide some guidance that's different than the existing one, the sooner the public knows that, I think that could send some hope out to the people who are thinking the most negative of things. I think that the
folks that are in these negotiations. I'm not sure what that schedule is, but continuing to delay more is people will then wait for, well, what is the Washington Commission's perspective on this, and when will it come out? And so there's some urgency there as well. And in terms of rescheduling in a couple of days, there are some difficulties with commissioners being present, one of them being me, that we're seeing right now, where we have two commissioners not on this call because it was scheduled to be completed last Friday. So I would like to hear from the staff today when we get around to that and have them offer whatever perspective they might have on policy guidance, including any kind of technical aspects that they think maybe has not been considered. Recognizing that could go on for quite a while, but I think it's better to try to deal with this today and finish it and find out where we're all at than to postpone. Let me go through just a reaction to Commissioner Graybill and Commissioner Thorburn's comments here. With regard to Commissioner Graybill, he makes some excellent points on the funding amounts here. You know, what there are so many variables in here to come up with an exact figure right now would be very difficult. The idea here was to, and where that $5 million came from is pretty skimpy information. Coming up with an engineering study to come up with an exact amount obviously is what ultimately would happen, but the intent here is to put a message out that there be a significant investment in a state-of-the-art conservation hatchery thing for this particular system. This is not the Snake River. This is not the kind of watershed that's nearly that big. But anyway, I'd say that Mr. Graybill made a good point that coming down to these numbers is going to have some uncertainty. The main thing here in my mind is to send out the message that there needs to be more help than just fishery restrictions. And if conservation hatchery approaches have worked in the past, in fact, there's one on the Sacramento River for the winter run chinook down there. They're in a endangered condition that is in play as well. That some sort of help of significance in the world of artificial propagation techniques, I think, is a positive matter that could help on this. He also mentioned, well, what if there are other stocks beyond the Stilly, Stilly Guamish, that become constraining? And that is also a very good point. The Stilly Guamish stocks now have been described as the bottleneck. All the dialogue has been about the Stilly Guamish stocks being the bottleneck. The Stilly Guamish is highlighted in the report as having particular habitat problems. The Stilly Guamish module is the one with the 8% feature that there are so many questions about. And so as this RMP negotiation process goes through, if during that process things settle down on some of the other systems where there are still discussions about what is the appropriate fishing rate there, if those come out as bigger bottlenecks than the Stilly Guamish, and we hear about that when we get periodic closed session briefings, then, you know, it's something that will have to be addressed. But for now, the reason of all of this is because the Stilly Guamish was the bottleneck in the December 1 agreement package. And with regard to just offering some perspectives on Commissioner Thorburn's points, on the matter of the $5 million and the budget process, you know, a similar comment here to Commissioner Graybill. The idea here is for the commission to make a solid statement that something more needs to be done and that something more be significant. And to make that statement now, because we're now just wrestling with what to do about all this. We didn't receive the briefings on all of this until January 12th. And so once we have found out that we have a problem and you want to propose something significant to do about it, in my mind, you say that. I'm not saying that the letter would say barge into the special session right now and pound our shoe on the table and demand a big amount of money right now. I'm not saying that, and I'm not sure exactly when this is best fit into what particular budget process. I am completely opposed to this kind of an emergency coming out of the department's budget, so I think that should be in the letter, and that's a good point to bring up. But anyway, in general, the idea here is if the Stillaguamish tribe also thinks this could be a positive move, and the commissioners think this would be a positive move, then let's say so. And not get too tangled up in whether it's $5 million or something different, maybe phrase it as multi-million dollar. But the more the questions, the more the delay. And so I think it's important to send out a signal that we want to do something positive here. On the matter of the off-ramp, perhaps that might be something that we might need to have a motion on. To hear more people, to hear more perspectives on and find out where the commission wants to go. The perspective that you ought to wait for an upward trend before you have a relaxation of the upper limits is a legitimate perspective to think about. And the examples that we talked about a couple weeks ago had to do not just with increasing the limit, but rather taking advantage of unforeseen positive things that might happen. And so I'll use the Pacific Salmon Commission Treaty 1 again. Let's suppose that the December 1 plan was in effect for Stillaguamish Falls Chinook, and let's suppose that there was ESA coverage for a 24% total impact. And there was an expectation that, you know, maybe 12% or more, 15% might be taken in northern fisheries, and 8% for the south, and have some numbers that add up to 24%. And you suddenly find out that there's a stock collapse in the north, and the Canadian folks and the Alaskan folks both agree that the northern interception fisheries should go to a couple of percent instead of 12 or 13%. And the agreement as it stands, as I understand it, it would lock down the south to the 8% in recent year abundance, and all of those fish between 8% and 24% absent whatever a small take in this hypothetical situation to the north would be passed to the river. If you have ESA clearance at the 24% level, this is consistent with rebuilding. Then the off-ramp idea would be to consider using some of those available percentages that are still within the constraints of the ESA for southern fisheries, to consider it. And an off-ramp just considers it. And if there aren't strong enough stocks to the south of justifying fishing, then there'd be a situational decision to pass them onto the spawning grounds. However, if it turns out that to the south there's very strong coho runs and you need incidental impacts for such fisheries, if there happens to be greatly enhanced Chinook hatchery populations for killer whales, and there's an opportunity for marked selective fishing going on, or there's other stocks in the south that are more bountiful, without an off-ramp type of situation, you would not have the open consideration of whether to do something there or not. So, you know, what is proposed here is for the staff to think about this concept of an off-ramp and to take the idea into the negotiations, and not to be prescriptive, but just to have the concept talked about and hear what the folks think about it, and that's the policy direction that's been offered here. But if it comes to questions on, you know, whether we should... should we recommend that there be a significant amount of money for a conservation hatchery, whether there ought to be an off-ramp feature, whether the staff ought to take some guidance to reopen the Stillaguamish module for the percentage points and take a look at other things, or whether there ought to be some line and seal control measures put forward on the table as a policy matter of guidance. You know, if there's not consensus if there's objection amongst the commissioners, then I think we ought to be prepared to put a motion on each of those things today, and I'd be prepared to do so.
This Thank is you, Commissioner Grayville. I just Mr. Grayville. Would like to comment. We are getting sort of specific on a lot of these items, and I agree. We need to get a message out to the public immediately that the commission is aware of potential mitigation that could have impact on this, that the process remains open, and to better inform the public about the extent of this process that will not be finalized until 2020. And so I think it is important today that we craft a motion that can be translated into a news release for immediate distribution to the public, to put aside some of the questions, erroneous assumptions, and other matters around this topic.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybell. At this point, I'd like to
Larry,
have staff.
This is Bob Kehoe. I'm sorry.
Commissioner Kehoe.
I have to go to another meeting. Let me just offer just my two cents. Thank you to Commissioner McIsaac for his very thoughtful analysis and creative approach to this. Thanks to the other commissioners with good questions. I was comforted by Commissioner McIsaac's responses to those questions. I agree we need to send a message, and I can't participate in the vote. Unfortunately, I have to leave, but I just want to voice my general support for moving forward. So thank you all. And
thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe.
Thanks.
Have a good day. If I hear no objections, I'd like to go to staff for response.
Commissioner Carpenter, this is Ron Warren.
Good morning, Mr. Warren.
I'd like to speak on behalf of the agency if I can. First of all, I'd like to thank the commission for the thoughtful way you're approaching this. I believe that this is a very timely matter. I have a sense of urgency due to our commitments to our co-managers and fulfilling and completing the plan. I think it's important that you've recognized the importance of the delegation or to the director, pardon me. That allows us to continue with the improved communications that are outlined to try to build back trust of our constituents, and I think that's very important. There are pieces of this, like PSC, that are not done, and there will be, as there have been in the past, likely mitigation packages that go along with additional work on important stocks that come out of that process. I don't know what those look like yet, but I think that pointing them out and giving us guidance to stay coordinated and working on those is extremely important. In general, the guidance about and the relative pieces about hatchery, the seal predation, the off-ramp pieces actually, I believe, give us strong guidance to go have those conversations. None of those pieces tell us to violate or test the limits of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. They don't tell us to do something outside of the mission of the agency leading towards conservation. They encourage us to stay along those lines, have those conversations, and work to improve the plan and the integrity of resource management and possible recovery in Puget Sound, specifically in this case to the Stillaguamish River. I think, and the one thing that I left for last that's most important is the urgency that we have about the habitat restoration work. I think that it's easy for us all to think about mitigation to reduce risks of things that we do while we're killing listed species in our activities that we're getting approved through NOAA. And habitat is the one thing that is consistent to everything we do, whether it's fishing or whether it's proper hatchery operations. We need more wild fish. And without those additional wild fish, the habitat that they need, we're not going to make a lot of progress. So I thought that the comments were well-rounded, concise enough to give me direction to go back to the table and continue to work in those directions and report back to the commission on a very regular basis. And I appreciate the work that all of you have done.
Thank you, Ron Warren. Appreciate your comments. Any follow-up or other questions?
Larry, this is Commissioner Smith again.
Sure.
I wasn't asking for a delay. I just wanted what Ron just did. I just wanted the staff to respond. I wasn't looking for an extra day or two to come back. So that suffices my need.
Very good. Any other follow-up questions, or is a motion appropriate? What's commission's feeling here?
This is Commissioner Thorburn. Thank you, Ron, for your comments. Very helpful. I guess I would prefer not to vote on this. The statement is made we're not to be too prescriptive. There are some pretty prescriptive items in this document, like write a letter to the governor. But as I listen to Ron, it's being taken more as guidance for negotiations. I guess I would prefer to just sort of say, okay, in that vein, great, I put the message up, but I still have concerns about the real direction, write a letter to the governor. I would rather have it be guidance. You know, this is something that we're thinking of, that the department could get way behind, and we'll figure out how to do that. We think it would contribute to the health of this particular stock. But I just am worried that if we're that directive, it's like, what's this going to accomplish? A letter to the governor asking for $5 million. And it might be questioned as insincerity by our co-managers. But if these are just guidelines of things that we're thinking about, then I can live with it.
Any other comments, Commissioners?
Not for me.
This is Commissioner Graybill, and I understand what Commissioner Thornburn is speaking to. I would like to get a message out that we have, in the sense we've heard from the department, we've heard from the commissioners, we have found mitigation elements that we believe could have direct impact on further negotiations, and these will be elements to be used, taken to the table in further negotiations. That we have listened to the public and the department and heard their concerns in terms of negotiation, and we have strong recommendations for policy to move forward. And I don't think we can get, as Commissioner Thornburn mentioned, too prescriptive in that. We don't want to tie the hands of our negotiators, and we don't want to mislead the public on what we feel are real elements to take to the table. That's my comment.
Yeah, Commissioner Smith.
Chair Smith.
Yeah, I concur with that Commissioner Graybill's comments. I have a little worry about being too prescriptive at this exact moment right now, and hand tying the staff and their daily workings. But
Mr. Chairman,
the overall feeling of the urgency is something that is important to get the message out.
Yep. Director Unsworth, did you?
This is Jim Unsworth, or Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you for the comments and for the direction. Appreciate it. I think there's some great ideas there, and certainly many of them need to be explored further. I think that the counsel given by Commissioner Graybill is wise, and I would encourage you to follow along that direction. Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else? Like,
Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes, Mr. McKenzie.
Well, it seems like that perhaps this kind of guidance of the staff is something that commissioners want to go along with the letter to the governor being the one that might be something that people need a little bit more comfort with. So let me suggest this, and again, the talking points I had earlier about not being prescriptive was in particular attention to inside the world of the complexities of the fishing-related impact rates by stock and all the rest of that, to completely stay away from being prescriptive there, and in general, all of that discussion under the world of the fishing impact rates not being prescriptive there. On the matter of the letter, maybe a way to get some comfort over this is in the news release, say that there'll be a request coming from, or a letter or something like that coming from the commission on the matter of a conservation hatchery. But then the language of the letter be something that's drafted up by staff in accordance with what they've heard here, and that every commissioner has a chance to take a look at that letter language and offer whatever edits they want to get a comfort level on what that letter exactly says. And again, the prescriptive part of this is not to be prescriptive in the negotiations at the table, but it would, if you want to call sending a letter prescriptive, that was the intent. And if you want to call trying to convene the habitat folks to talk about habitat improvements prescriptive, yes, that was the intent. I viewed those things as a higher level of decision to send a message out that we want to make things better. And not being prescriptive was inside the world of all of those technical complexities with regard to fishing impacts. So I guess I'm suggesting if everybody's okay with the rest of it, to not send a letter without all the commissioners having a chance to look at the language and signing off on that.
Any objections?
I'm much more comfortable with what Commissioner Graybill suggested. Thank you, Dave, for clarifying my concerns. Right now, we need to get through negotiating ARM, and I think these are all really important conservation approaches, but working with co-managers, and I think we need to negotiate and understand where they're coming from, and to start prescribing direction for staff without recognizing that we have a lot of partners in this. makes me really uncomfortable. I would prefer to go the direction that Commissioner Grable.
Yes, Commissioner Grable. Yes, I would be. I would like to entertain a motion that that communicates to the public that the commission has carefully considered options to mitigation that could potentially provide relief. That the negotiations continue to be open, and we've advised staff to consider mitigation elements that can be introduced to the process, and also assure the public that the process is open and there will be opportunity further down the road for continued input as this as discussions continue, and that's. Something we can, you know, we could mention habitat, we could mention marking, we can mention the potential for support to the Stillaguamish tribe and other elements through the department to immediately address production and any other elements that you think we can talk about taking on the task of reducing seal populations in Puget Sound. We could bullet point some of these options that are being considered that could provide relief. I also believe that we should mention that the PFC discussions continue and will have impact on that, and which is an unknown. But we've identified strong mitigation elements that could have positive impact on Puget Sound fisheries as we move forward with discussions with our co-managers.
Now, if you were making a motion there, Commissioner Grable, I don't know if Tammy got all that. Tammy, can you make make a couple sentences out of that?
I will listen to the recording and get it down, yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure she had that, Commissioner Grable.
Yeah, I don't understand the motion, so I guess be nice to have that clarified or read back. I'm not, I guess this is Commissioner McIsaac, Commissioner Grable, I'm not exactly sure if you're speaking just to the mitigation parts of it and that the rest of all of this is fine, or if you're saying the rest of it's not fine and all you want to put forward is just the mitigation ideas. And if that is, and so that's one question, and then if that's true, I guess I'd like to hear exactly again, what is the motion? Well, maybe the first question, Commissioner Graybill, was your intent to send out only some message about mitigation and be silent on all the rest?
Commissioner McIsaac, I think what our what the public wants is the assurance that we are not locked into this 8% on what they've learned so far. What we're offering is the potential relief from that by identifying mitigation elements that could have a real impact on that. And the discussions continue to be open, and we have advised staff to explore these options as elements to be introduced to the discussions. Yes, and I think that
this is
how to address the primary concerns of the public.
Well, this is Commissioner Carpenter. I'm pretty close to this issue, and I think I'm pretty familiar with the issue. And timing is everything, and you know, we can move to not be prescriptive, and I understand all that language and so on, but we have a crisis on our hands here, and we have to show some leadership
on how we move forward on this issue. And I've reviewed Commissioner McIsaac's proposal probably six or seven times, and I candidly can't find fault in that. And again, to reiterate, I think we have to really show some leadership. That's not something we do all the time, but in this case, I think we need to, and I support it. I support Commissioner McIsaac's proposal in total.
This is Commissioner Graybill. I agree. This is a powerful document that McIsaac has composed. It does not translate into a message to the public. It translates into a message to the department on how we would think there's ways to proceed, but we're not going to put this document out in front of the public and, as a message.
Mr. Graybill, that was not my intent. Commissioner McIsaac spoke during his presentation about providing guidance to the staff to put a news release out promptly. That's what I was referring to.
I agree we need to proceed in that direction, and I apologize. I'm not composing a motion in my head. Perhaps I can ask for help with that, so that we have a concise message that we can send to the public that assures them that this process is open. Commissioners have been briefed by staff and are exploring options that could provide relief and will be taken by staff to the table with our co-managers as this process moves forward. And we could bullet point elements that we agree to that would include everything from increased hatchery production, the reduction of seal populations in Puget Sound, habitat improvements, and any other elements you'd like to bullet point so the public understands that there are some real pieces of this puzzle that are being presented to staff as options as we further negotiate this package.
Commissioner Carpenter, this is Ron Warren.
Yes, Ron Warren.
If I might, what I would possibly offer the commission is that as you have deliberated on whether or not to go forward with the guidance that's been outlined, I would just want to kindly remind the commission that you're likely going to get sick and tired of my face over the course of the next few months, because every 2 weeks I'm going to be in front of you providing updates on where we are on this topic, and that as we update you on conversations on each of the items or elements of the guidance, you could take action later down the road or continue the conversation as new developments arise. But the guidance to work towards the ability to ask for funding from the governor's office is a lofty goal, and taking that commitment and providing that as a trust issue to our constituents and a commitment to our co-managers is a very lofty one, and one that I would be excited to discuss and work towards achieving.
Thank you, Ron. I guess I'll ask the question of the director, Ron, Kyle, Mike Grossman. Do you feel like you have enough significant guidance from the commission to get the ball rolling, and then we can do a follow-up in the very near future as far as any other issues that might arise or need attention?
Mr. Vice Chairman, this is Jim. Yes, we do.
Do that any of the commissioners? Go ahead, Commissioner McKay.
Yeah, listening carefully to Commissioner Graybill, I think we're very close on this, and you know, maybe me running through all of these things in such detail got things a little bit confusing, but I think what I understand Mr. Graybill to be saying, Commissioner Graybill to be saying, is that let's task staff with moving forward with these in the area of fishery restrictions, moving forward with those ideas to the staff as a matter of negotiating stance to bring to the table, and not be prescriptive, and let them have the flexibility to do best they can toward trying to achieve those. And in the area of the non-fishing matters, I think what I was hearing was to provide the staff with the guidance, agreeing with the staff with the guidance in general, to go out and pursue those non-fishing conservation matters that are there. The letter still seems to be a little bit hung up, but and then the third matter of communicating this quickly and with a positive message to those folks that have been critical or don't understand this, that's what Commissioner Graybill was also in favor of. So other than what's in the language of this letter, I guess I'd ask Commissioner Graybill, is what I just said true, or are there things you would not like to see go forward as just guidance to the staff to try to do the best they can on?
This is Commissioner Thorburn. As I listened to Ron, I was a little bit more comfortable with the way that he described it as guidance, that they'd be working with stakeholders and co-managers. This is an idea that's on the table. It's developed with those discussions before any letter is written, before we make a commitment as a department what our role in this is going to be. So I was sort of feeling, listening to Ron, that it was guidance for a good direction for rebuilding the stock, but it needs development with our partners before any solid action is taken by the department, and I'm very comfortable with that.
Okay. So this is Commissioner Baker.
Commissioner Baker.
Now we're at the point where we all get to restate what Ron said, which is almost humorous. But what I heard Ron saying is that we're going to have time to adjust as we go along and as we know more. If the letter to the governor and the budgeting process is a hang-up here, I would prefer to postpone that, which is not to say that I want to postpone putting the idea of a Stilla Guamish conservation hatchery on the table as a bullet, because that seems to me, from what we've seen and learned in the last few days, to be a something that could really help. So I'd say, Ron, we're not going to get sick of seeing your face on this. We need to have all the ideas in front of us. Someone mentioned the point, it was a question of sincerity in there, and I think someone also said that we need to do more than talk. So I'd like to just make my point that I am extremely sincere about this, and again make the point that I would hope that both the stakeholders involved and especially the co-managers understand that what, at least from my perspective, we're doing here is something they've been asking us to do for a while, and that's really pay attention to the habitat. So I'm sincere in that, and I would be fine with a motion, which is a little, I think we're all saying the same thing. We provided direction, here's some of our ideas, ask our negotiators to go back and take these ideas with as much sincerity as can be interjected, and come back pretty soon and talk about it. We can, at that, in the interim, explore options for financing, explore the proper way to approach whomever we need to approach on a big ticket item. But, you know, that's happened before, and we can look at it, and I'm happy to work on that end of it.
This is Commissioner Graybill again.
Commissioner Graybill.
When we talk about the letter, what that is addressing is the potential for increased production and using tactics to improve those stocks, whether it's broodstock, egg gathering, or whatever. So I'm just suggesting as a bullet point, increased hatchery production as an element that we're offering to the staff to explore, to introduce to these discussions. In the same way, and again, I'll reiterate that we've identified strong potential mitigating factors, increased hatchery production, habitat improvement, reduction of the seal populations in Puget Sound, results of negotiations in the northern fisheries. Those broad topics be introduced as having strong potential impact on the negotiations, and that we as a commission have advised staff to introduce these topics in discussion.
Anything else?
That's all.
Well, I guess, go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Yeah, Commissioner McIsaac, just one last thing here. On this matter of the hatchery business and the letter, the commissioners were forwarded a copy of my talking points from yesterday, and let me just stress one little change here that you may not have heard. I'll repeat what the recommendation here was for guidance on the Stilla Guamish hatchery that I said today. And it was that I recommend the commission task the department staff with pursuing this idea, this concept, with the Stilla Guamish tribe. And if this concept is something they are amenable to, forwarding a request to the governor's office to pursue $5 million in new resources for a state-of-the-art conservation hatchery with a completely bulletproof, secure water system, period. So just so that's out there, I think it's consistent with the general guidance of working with our co-managers on this before sending such a letter. And the other things that David added in there as bullet points of guidance, I'm fine with those.
Okay, I think I'm going to have to move to bring this agenda item to closure. There's been some very, very good comments by all. I think the department has guidance, and I would just ask the department staff, as you move forward with this and the news release, if there's anything that that comes up that we need to talk with you about, please feel free to get with that. Do any of the commissioners have any additional comments before we move on?
I think you said it, Larry. Thank you.
Okay. Hearing none, I just want to make a very brief statement, and I personally want to reach out and thank a whole bunch of people for a best effort to help resolve a very, very difficult issue. And I don't want to be remiss and not thank the public for their time and driving long distances and coming in front of us and their heartfelt comments. And I really, really want to thank staff for their work and late nights and long hours. We don't say it often enough, but we appreciate it. And in closing, I want to personally thank my colleagues on the commission for digging into this and helping with it. I think it's very, very positive and heartfelt
effort to try and rebuild some stocks of salmon and provide some additional opportunities. So thank you all.